I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. He went from being the first black mayor of Kansas City to Missouri's 5th District U.S. Representative. She was a first-generation college student who won the Kansas 3rd District in her first political race. Today, U.S. Representatives Emanuel Cleaver and Charisse Davids join us in the studio together for the first time. We'll get their thoughts on what it'll take to unite the Democratic Party for the 2020 election, if they think there are generational differences in representing people of color, and their reactions to Robert Mueller's resignation, all that and more, as we get you up to date after this hour's news. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver has said he's open to impeaching President Trump, but before he makes a decision on that big question, he wanted to hear from Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Well, we've now heard all we're going to hear from Mr. Mueller, so the question now becomes, what does the congressman want to do? We're about to find out. Joining us this morning are Congressman Emanuel Cleaver from Missouri's 5th District and Congressman Charisse Davids from the 3rd District of Kansas. Congressman Cleaver, always good to have you. Welcome
back.
Good to
be here. Yeah. Thank you.
Congresswoman Davids, nice to have you too. Welcome.
I'm excited to be here.
Congressman Cleaver, you said you wanted to hear from Robert Mueller before making a call on impeachment. You've said you're open to the idea of removing the president from office. The special counsel has spoken, so where are you today?
Well, I spoke to Jerry Nadler last Wednesday.
He's a congressman overseeing the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, chair of the Judiciary from New York. And I said, what are we going to do with the Mueller situation? He said to me, that he had been, let me correct that, that his attorneys had been in conversation with Mr. Mueller, that Mr. Mueller had agreed to testify before Congress. Hmm. What he wants is just a testimony in front of Congress as opposed to it being televised. So that's where the sticky point hits. I don't think there's any question that Mueller is going to testify. And if it's public, I think it's...
But he said yesterday he would not. Well, he said he was done yesterday. That was his last statement on the matter.
Yeah, but you know, Mr. Mueller follows the law, and if he receives a subpoena, he is going to testify. And I think his testimony is going to be riveting, and I think it will dispel the notion once and for all that there was no collusion and no obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to hear that. I think it's important that we make an intelligent decision. I like to slow walk so that I won't have to back walk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm right now.
Well, and just to be clear, though, he did say yesterday, Congressman Cleaver, that he would not say anything beyond what was in the report that he's already issued, even if he were to appear. That was my sense of his comments yesterday. So what more do you hope to get?
Well, my hope is that he will testify in front of the committee and then meet with Jerry Nadler and attorneys in a confidential situation, and that they will find out the answer to only a couple of questions. One is, were you asked to discontinue the investigation? Were you told to wrap it up? And then secondly, if this were – he said he didn't want to deal with hypotheticals, but I think in the back room – If the person's name had been Emanuel Cleaver as opposed to Donald Trump, would you have filed charges? And I think the answer is yes. But I think people want to hear that.
So as far as you're concerned, we're at a real pivot point here. That
absolutely.
The drama continues. Nothing's been resolved here.
No. I talked to Nancy Pelosi last night, and her position is exactly the same. I think you're going to find that all but maybe 35 members of Congress are going to be in the same position.
Meaning
Democrats in the House.
Meaning that they favor impeachment today. There's still a minority of members of the Democratic caucus who favor impeachment.
Yes, right now.
Yeah. Congresswoman Davids, do you believe that those numbers have changed in the wake of Robert Mueller's statement yesterday? Are more Democrats getting on board of the idea of impeaching the president or not?
Well, so I've been back here. I haven't gotten on the phone with leadership or anything. I know right. Emmanuel Cleaver has a longer standing relationship there, but I haven't had conversations with any of my colleagues during this week that we've been, you know, in our home districts. In some ways, I think that it would be a little bit surprising for folks to really have maybe a tectonic shift in their thoughts on it because, you know, I didn't hear the special counsel say anything that wasn't already in writing in the report. And so, you know, I think that there are probably a lot of people who maybe outside of the House who haven't had the chance to look at the report. I mean, there are a lot of people who are just trying, you know, there are a lot of people who are trying to live their lives and get to work and take care of their families.
As you get around the third district, given the fact we are talking about the I word here, impeachment, that's a heavy duty word. Are you hearing much from your constituents about this? Is it coming up in casual conversation or not much?
Well, I don't find myself having casual conversation as much as I did before I started this job. But, you know, I can tell you this, that when the Mueller report was released, and I'm not talking about the summary. I mean, when the full redacted report was released, we definitely started hearing more from people as people started to consume that document and you know, we're reading through and seeing what is. I mean, there's a lot of really serious, not just information, but you know, especially in volume one, when you look at a lot of us are worried about the idea of Russia meddling in our elections, and so I definitely, and then in volume two around the obstruction issue, we have heard from folks, whether it's conversations with me at various events that we're going to, because we're constantly doing meetings and events in the district, and emails. You know, people send us emails, they make phone calls, and I think that the Mueller report being released was increased the number of people who are reaching out about it.
I was going to say, Congresswoman, you haven't shown, at least to date, much interest in proceeding with impeachment of the president. Is that where you still are today, or has the report begun to change your thinking?
Well, I definitely will say that when I read the report, it's a long document, and so it took me a little while. Partly because I don't sit on the relevant committees. You know, I imagine that the folks on judiciary and oversight and probably intelligence, like, they probably read that thing, blocked off their calendars and read it as soon as it came out.
Right.
I was reading it on the plane. Actually, Emmanuel Cleaver and I got stuck on the tarmac for about 4 hours day.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm reading it because it is part of my duty as a member of Congress.
Yeah. Did it change your thinking?
But I think all it did was solidify the fact that, you know, I definitely have trust in the and an expectation that the folks who are on the Judiciary Committee and oversight and intelligence, they're doing their jobs in the same way that they expect me as a member of transportation and infrastructure and someone who sits on the aviation subcommittee. You know, when it comes to oversight, we're in the middle of looking at the FAA certification process because we had two plane crashes internationally, but, you know, and so it hasn't changed my thinking. It just has solidified that, you know, this process that the committees are going through it's an important process. We should, as members of Congress, absolutely be able to see the full unredacted report.
Yeah.
I think the underlying documents should be presented because, you know, that is part of the process that the committees need to go through.
I'm wondering what the two of you say to people like Rick Hellman, who wrote on my Facebook page last night. I said that the two of you were going to be on the show. And he wrote this: Mueller provided all the evidence necessary and says that charging is up to them. Well, what are they waiting for? Every day, Trump does more damage to the body politic, to the Constitution. Every day they fail to impeach him, they are derelict in their duties. Congressman Cleaver, what do you say to Rick Hellman?
Well, I believe that it is important in a democracy for people who are elected and in a position to actually cancel out an election to be very deliberate and thoughtful. I am just not going to be pushed into doing something that will not change anything and probably do enormous damage to the nation. We're already terribly, terribly divided as a nation, and if we go through impeachment without bringing the nation along with it, we're going to become even more divided. I'm not one of the people who say that Donald Trump is trying to goad us into – I don't think that's the way he functions. I think he just wakes up and does things. But I do think that as an American who – I have a little 3-year-old grandson, Braxton. I would like very much for him to grow up in a democracy, and I would like for him to enjoy a country that's not so bitterly divided that he can talk to people from any section of the country. And right now, I'm just going in. Look, only 30, according to an NPR PBS poll, only 39% of the American public wants impeachment. Mm-hmm. And then people say, well, they don't ever listen to us. Well, we are.
Yeah, right. Well, and there is this notion, Congresswoman Davids, that even if the House were to impeach, you have the Republican-controlled Senate, which almost certainly would not convict. And then sort of where are you? I mean, there is that. Does that a factor as you weigh all this, that the House is Democratic, the Senate is Republican? Removing the president from office probably isn't an end game product here that's waiting in the off wings.
I would no. That's not. That isn't where I'm at when I'm thinking about all of this stuff. And I think I think because I'm a lawyer, law school does a really good job of affecting the way you think about things. And by that I mean, I do everything I can to be as methodical and process oriented when I'm evaluating not just this issue but every issue.
I have a
process for how I decide whether or not I'm going to co-sponsor something, if I'm going to vote yes or no on something, even as simple as signing on to a letter that my colleagues asked me to sign on to. Mm-hmm. We have a process for all of that, and that's the thing that's driving that is driving where I'm at now and will continue to do so. I did my diligence. I read the report. I am following what the relevant committees are doing and I get onto every briefing call. I'm making sure that I'm keeping up to speed, because when it comes time for the Judiciary Committee to run through their process and make a recommendation or ask the full House a question, I will be ready to answer that question.
Right.
I'll be ready to vote yes or no, and that's the process that I follow for everything.
Right.
And I genuinely believe if I take into account what all the information, and the information includes what are the people in my district, in the district that I'm supposed to be representing, mm-hmm. what are they asking of their representative? It also includes making sure that I have read the full Mueller report. And, I can't expect every single person in our district and, the folks who are really trying to just live their life to read the Mueller report. And they depend on me to make sure
right.
that I'm actually doing that. And so making sure that I'm following this process is going to be the thing that helps me get there. Not whether or not it's going to – like, if I do my job well, I believe that the people who voted for me to have this seat will continue to do so.
Right.
It is not going to be whether or not I voted yes or no on one specific thing. It will be, how did I handle myself while I was here?
You know, Congressman Cleaver, when the Mueller report was released back in April, and you haven't been on since then, you said this: we can debate back and forth whether the president's actions reach the high bar of criminality. What should not be up for debate is the fact that the president's behavior is beneath the office of the presidency and extremely dangerous to the democratic institutions America was founded on. What did you mean by that?
Well, the president every morning gets out of bed and begins to destroy some of our most cherished institutions, and he is constantly slicing into small pieces any of the standards of conduct that we have come to expect from the President of the United States. He's an embarrassment abroad. We just saw what he did with Kim Jong-un, a murdering dictator, by siding with him to attack Joe Biden, as they are in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, every morning we wake up in Washington wondering, what did he do last night, and what has he already begun to do in the morning? He starts tweeting around 3 a.m. in the morning, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So he is damaging all of our institutions, the Justice Department. Just think about this. There are going to be people now who are going to say, when they get indicted, I want to find out if the FBI agents and the U.S. attorneys who arrested me and investigated me are Republicans or Democrats.
Hmm.
You know, and I think that is extremely dangerous to the country. And that's why I have so much respect for Tom Coleman, former representative from our area, from
Republican.
The 6th District. Republican.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who is extremely conservative.
Yeah.
Who was saying the same thing that I just said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can I just say
yeah. Wait,
because I think what my colleague said, I mean, I can say it better than what she said, just said. And it goes like this. She reads everything, every line. Now, I've been there long enough, so I don't read the motions to re-refer. It is the opposition's way of trying to get, you know, get people to vote on something that they can use against them in a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
After you know, most people don't read it. You know, you vote no. And on the other side, they do the same thing. She reads every line, every word, and she'll vote late. You know, you can see everybody's vote on the board, and then people will come up, Steny Hoyer or Jim Clyburn. Davis hasn't voted. I said she's still reading it. You know, she's going to vote. She's still reading it.
Yeah, that's. I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago, Congresswoman Davids. The concern about Russia's impact, the first volume of the Mueller report, and the danger of continuing Russian interference in our elections. How concerned should we be going forward that our election system could be compromised in 2020 and going forward?
Well, I think that there's it's twofold, the concern. There are two different pieces of it. One is the what I would call a disinformation campaigns that are laid out in and that was actually very alarming in the Mueller report when I read through that, is that there was a concerted effort to put up social media ads,
mm-hmm.
to try to organize rallies that were really the impetus of all of that information were Russian operatives. And that part is very, very concerning. And right now it's, you know, I guess I always try to think about the long term. So say we address the disinformation piece, that the specific, you know, there were indictments that came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But now what we've got is almost like a model. And we have to be making sure that we're and some of it is starting to happen in the way that there needs to be transparency in who's paying for the ads that are going up on the digital ads,
mm-hmm.
Regardless of the social media platform, that those are the kinds of things that we really need to be thinking about and trying to address. And I know in the House, in the Democratic caucus, we've been working on increasing transparency. I mean, one of the first bills that we passed, the For the People Act, included some transparency around campaign finance. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people will always say, follow the money.
Right.
Who's paying for it? I think that that's at least one small way we can start to address that. And then, you know, I'm very concerned about voter suppression, there's voter suppression, and then there's election fraud. So we saw election fraud in North Carolina, in the 9th district there,
mm-hmm.
and then we've seen voter suppression all across the country. And one of my biggest concerns with Kris Kobach was the way that our Secretary of State's office was used to purge rolls, to make it harder for people to register to vote. And those are some of those things are fundamental things that are are happening here domestically and are not as tied to a foreign government or foreign entity trying to affect it.
Congresswoman Charisse Davids is in the House along with Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, before we go to a break, Congressman Cleaver, how are the farmers in your district east of Kansas City faring right now with all the rain we've had, the trade issues looming and the things they're dealing with? What are you seeing out there?
Well, I have a farmers advisory committee. I meet with them often. I was out in Marshall meeting with them 2 weeks ago. They are just being devastated. First of all, usually the planting would begin in May. Well, you can't plant if the fields are all wet.
And
silt and sand comes on the field, and you may not be able to plant even when it dries up. It may take a couple of years. But then soybeans, we export. Missouri has a $80 billion agricultural export business. And so whenever you start having problems with your market, it's going to devastate farmers. I have farmers who are saying, I don't know if my Century Farm is going to be able to survive because, we can't borrow money. We usually can borrow money before our crops are harvested because people know that, it's just a matter of time. But right now, there's so much uncertainty. Soybeans are 8.5 cents today. When the tariffs were first initiated, they were over 10. So they are getting hit so hard with the water, and the levees have held so far, but we have seepage, and that's what's creating a problem for many of the farmers. They are saying, we don't want aid, we want trade. And I think the president's making a terrible mistake. And I said on the floor of the House, I said, Mr. President, these are the people who voted for you. But now I'm hearing farmers in this district who voted for him, who have been clear about it. Many of them, weirdly, I don't understand this, but voted for me and Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying now, that he is hurting them so badly, they don't know if they can vote for him again.
Hmm. So what needs to happen now to help them?
Well, first of all, the first thing we need is the truth. This morning, the president stood out in front of people who know better and said repeatedly that the Chinese are paying a heavy price for the tariffs on the United States. The word tariff is a synonym for tax.
Mm-hmm.
And he's continuing to say that it's the Chinese that are paying, getting hit hard, and we are being held harmless, and that's not the case. So the first thing, is to make sure the people, the farmers already understand it. He can't say
right.
anything to them. But I think we've got to, the president is not going to be able to hold back the flood, and he's talking about increasing the tariffs, which I think will just wreck this economy. Right now, what we really need to do is the president to actually have a plan. There's no plan. He just woke up one morning and said, we're going to put tariffs on goods from China. And so if you're going to pay for it when you go into Walmart and Target and all these companies, because they have to inch up on the price because they're buying prices at a higher cost because of the tariffs. I think it's one of the worst things that could have happened to the economy.
Well, it's time for a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with our two area members of Congress, Emanuel Cleaver and Charisse Davids. We'll turn to the burgeoning race for the Democratic presidential nomination, and we'll talk about a whole lot more as well. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, the 2019 Kansas Poet Laureate will be here to talk about increasing the visibility of literary artists in the Sunflower State. You can join us for that conversation tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, this hour we're visiting with our two area members of Congress, Emanuel Cleaver from Missouri's 5th District, Charisse Davids from Kansas's 3rd District. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Rick from Independence, thanks for holding on, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. Our scholars and researchers have warned us that the biggest threat to what remains of our democracy is the billionaires that run both political parties. Now, ironically, as well, a couple of billionaires came forward, Bill Gates and a hedge fund billionaire, and they made an announcement. It was posted on NPR that if we don't reverse income inequality, there will be a revolution in this country, another one. And of course, Citizens United is what elevated the billionaires to have access and control of both political parties. Well, Congressman Cleaver, why is it Nancy Pelosi and her corporate Democrats will not move to reverse Citizens United? I know how it can be done very easily.
Let me just give a comment here from the congressman. Go ahead, Congressman.
Yes. I don't know if you Nancy Pelosi would probably, if she were on the show, tell you that she thinks it's one of the worst decisions that, to have ever been upheld by the Supreme Court. You know, keep in mind, we have 53 Republican senators. We have 45 Democrats and two independents in the Senate. We can pass, as my colleague mentioned earlier, a lot of laws and trying to redesign a law that would prevent corporations from being human beings and from trying to buy their way through the profit machine. We can introduce legislation. It's not going to go anywhere until we get the Senate. And I think one of the things that Democrats don't do is look at the courts. Republicans do it exceedingly better than Democrats. They focus on the courts. And so when that went to the court system, that's where we got hurt. And when the whole issue of corporations putting money into politics went to the Supreme Court, I agree with you. I think it's awful, but that's the way it is. And until we change and assure that we have, people on the court system, both at the district and the appellate level, we're not going to be able to do anything about Citizens United.
Rick, thank you. Let's go to Martin from Kansas City, Missouri. Martin, you're on the air.
Ah, thank you. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you to both of the congresswoman and the congressman for taking our questions. My question is, putting the impeachment question aside, I'm wondering where Congress is at with holding people in contempt for not complying with subpoenas and with discussing the various methods of enforcing that holding of contempt.
Congresswoman Davids, you want to take that?
She's a lawyer.
Well,
yes.
So I'm the watching folks not comply with subpoenas when they're coming out of committees that definitely have the jurisdiction to issue a subpoena. Watching people who really are not being held accountable simply because of the position they hold. If I got a traffic ticket and I didn't show up to traffic court, they would haul me in to jail. Mm-hmm. And it certainly says something about the. I actually think this speaks additionally to the question that was brought up previously about who exercises power in this country over things. My understanding of what is going on with the contempt on not complying with subpoenas,
right,
is that there are a few different options for how that contempt order would be carried out. And, the House hasn't had to exercise the full range of those options in a long time, like over 100 years. And, I think that I might be mistaken. And Congressman Cleaver, if you know something different, my understanding is that at least on the contempt issues, we might be seeing something next week when we get back. As I said, I don't sit on the relevant committees, but mm-hmm. I do believe that it would come to the full House floor for us to vote on something like that. And I can tell you, I think that people should absolutely have to adhere to a subpoena. And if they don't think that they should, they need to come before the relevant committee to state why and why they won't provide the information that was requested in that subpoena.
Congressman Cleaver, next week, do you expect something too?
It should be next week or the following week. It may be important for the caller to know that the Judiciary Committee has already held Attorney General Barr in contempt. They've already voted it. which means that when you vote something out of committee, it comes to the floor. There is a plan that is being discussed that we would bring a number of people to the floor for contempt, which would include Secretary Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, the administrator of the IRS. And one of the things that is being discussed is that if you start fining people $25,000 a day for not showing up, it'll get their attention pretty soon. Maybe not Mnuchin. He's a billionaire. But the IRS administrator and Barr are not billionaires.
Okay. Let's go back to some calls. And Mary from Shawnee. Mary, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. How are you?
Well, thanks, Mary.
Oh, good. Thank you. My question was, I know the farmers, especially the soybean and, corn and wheat farmers are really being affected by these tariffs. And we've had to bail them out twice. And I know that farmers don't really like a bailout because they're very proud people. And I noticed that they said that, he raised the tariffs and he's going to send more emergency funding for them. And I want to know, where is this money coming from? Is it coming from the taxpayers? Are we, going to keep, having to do this because of bad decisions made in the White House?
Congressman Cleaver, any sense of that?
Yeah. Any money that you hear about or read about is being spent is coming from the taxpayers, mm-hmm. whether we're borrowing from China or not. But just look at how awkward it is that we've been principally borrowing from China because they have a savings rate. I don't want to get it too deep into the savings rate that's significantly higher than that of the United States. So they always have the money to go out and buy U.S. paper. But I think that we are spending money to fix a problem that was created by the president because he did not strategize. He did not plan. From people who know him, they say he's been talking about this for the last 15 years, wanting to place tariffs on China and not understanding what tariffs are. They're taxes. And they hurt the people in both places, frankly. But we're getting hurt over here as a result.
Let me turn to another burgeoning issue for Democrats these days, and that's the crowded, jam-packed race for the Democratic presidential nomination. About 24 candidates are in the race. Congresswoman Davids, how worried are you that a protracted, divisive fight here is going to further divide the Democratic Party? What do you think about that?
First, I'll say I might have mentioned this last time, but I checked in with my mom. She's not going to run for president.
She's not going yet.
She's decided not to do it.
Are you?
I am not running for president.
Yeah. Congressman Cleaver, you're not going. Okay. All right.
It's funny because actually, I remember a lot of the concern when I was one of the last people to get into the race that I was in, and it ended up being a 6-way primary. Right. And if one person hadn't left after I got in, it would have been a 7-way. And, I think that there are benefits and drawbacks to having a crowded primary field. And
are you worried about it for the Democratic Party's sake?
I'm not feeling a strong sense of anxiety around that, maybe because we're so far out right now. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm not particularly feeling a sense of anxiety. But I can also say that the amount of brain space that I've spent focusing on the Democratic primary for president is so slim because we've got so many huge issues going on. And I literally just came from a mental and behavioral health panel that we were doing, and mm-hmm. The boots on the ground work that we're trying to do in the 3rd district in Kansas is that takes up more of my brain space. So
right. Do you think Joe Biden's going to be the runaway nominee here? The polls suggested today, Congressman Cleaver, could you live with that?
I think he probably is not going to begin to lose any space. I am concerned about not so much the number, and a number of them are my friends.
I bet.
But here's the problem. The Republicans arguably nominated the worst presidential candidate they've ever, this is my opinion, that they could have ever nominated, Donald Trump. We arguably, and I think historians would agree, at least on paper, Hillary Clinton was probably the best the most experienced and most qualified person to ever run. So they had a smooth convention nominating Donald Trump. We had a convention where, and I think you were there. They're screaming and shouting at Hillary Clinton, even as she's accepting her speech before the campaign actually begins. And so if we, the Bernie Sanders people were the ones screaming and shouting, and many of them no doubt didn't vote for her. So if it goes to the convention, whether it's Bernie Sanders or another one, where the people are so fired up that they're not going to support the candidate, they'd rather have Trump than have a Democrat that they disagree with, then I think it's going to be another bad 4 years from my perspective.
You know, a different issue, a lot of talk about an infrastructure package coming out of Washington. Congresswoman David, you sit on a committee that's relevant here. There was this meeting last week between the president and Democratic leaders that broke up suddenly after the president was accused of ducking congressional subpoenas to act as a cover-up for his own misbehavior. That was from Speaker Pelosi. Are we going to see an infrastructure deal in the next few months? Do you have any read on where that might be going and how that might be might impact the 3rd District?
Well, two things. So one is the impact of the 3rd District and actually the whole Kansas City metro area on this country's infrastructure is it's massive. You know, where we sometimes refer to ourselves as the heartland, and really we're a core piece of how goods get all over the country. We've got 5 major intersecting highways. We've got the biggest rail hub. You know, if you add in passenger, we're 2nd biggest, but you know, we're moving things all over the country and internationally.
Right.
And so we can't understate the importance of this region in terms of infrastructure. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to be on that committee. And I can tell you that the committee hearings and meetings that we've been having, there's bipartisan support for making sure that we get something, that we get an infrastructure package together.
I've been surprised we haven't had it before now, given that bipartisan support, which has been there for a couple of years.
Yeah, it has. And I think one of the things, this is my perspective in my first term here. One of the things that I think we were butting up against was, I would say, a lack of understanding about the urgency with which we need to address this issue. One of the first committee hearings we had, it was a full committee hearing, once we got through the shutdown, was the impact of not investing in our infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, we are right now operating on an infrastructure system that was built by our grandparents. Mm-hmm. And it is our job, and we have the opportunity right now to build an infrastructure that will be safe and reliable and adequate for our grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And if we don't invest right now, the cost as we move forward is just going to increase. And the disasters that we're seeing, natural disasters that we're seeing, having bridges crumble and fall apart.
Right.
Like, if we don't invest right now, then our entire country will suffer. And I think that the people in the committee recognize that, and that we need to do it.
Cleaver, I guess, got 30 seconds left. Would I-70, the rebuilding of I-70 across Missouri, possibly be part of an infrastructure package?
Absolutely.
If Congress moves forward?
Absolutely.
That issue's been on the table now for years. We really haven't moved forward on it.
The Missouri delegation is one of the few delegations in the country that meet. You know, some of the delegations, if they have to meet, they bring guns and knives. We actually meet once a month. And everybody agrees on the transportation, on an infrastructure bill, and on earmarks, mm-hmm. Republicans and Democrats. And so I think a perfect storm for the kind of infrastructure that the people need in Missouri.
Okay, we're going to have to leave our conversation there. I want to thank our two members of Congress, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver from Missouri's 5th District, Congresswoman Charisse Davids from Kansas's 3rd. Thank you both for coming in and sharing
your
views. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you. See you soon.
Coming up, Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list.
So I knew.
Love that song. Brian McTavish is here to sing it for us and talk about cool stuff to do on your weekend. That's Todd Rundgren. He's going to be here himself.
He is going to be here.
And great song.
That's a big deal. Yeah, that's I Saw the Light. That's one of the really super cool early to mid 70s songs.
Man, yeah.
That Todd
that's
will
going back a ways.
Bring back to life. He's the veteran rock and roll eccentric who will revisit his old hits because...
And it's going to happen in Lawrence.
Eight o'clock Saturday, Liberty Hall in Lawrence. You know, a lot of artists, they just go out and they do the fan service routine.
Right.
And Todd is doing a little bit more of that. He's on his individualist tour, which belies the fact that he's actually going to tackle a lot of these old hits. Now, if there's anything predictable about Todd, is that he will always entertain. He has the most friendly and thoughtful stage presence and a surprising number of songs that you will remember.
Yes.
Hello, It's Me.
I love that song.
Can We Still Be Friends?
Yes.
And this sounds a little funny to say now, but Once Upon a Time, We Gotta Get You a Woman.
That's right.
That
That's
was
right.
huge.
Yeah.
They'll be singing along to that. And the Sidemen at 8 o'clock Saturday at Liberty Hall in Lawrence. Kazim Sultan, he's also harmonizing and playing bass. He's been doing that forever with Todd, at least since the early 70s, mid-70s. Also on stage with Todd, Tubes Prairie Prince on drums.
Wow.
And the Cars, this is the coolest, the Cars' Greg Hawks on keyboard.
Okay.
And these were the same folks that he brought last time. He was fantastic last September at KC Crossroads, and he did the greatest version of Don't Bogart That Joint, which is arguably a rock and roll classic of some kind. I mean, you'll never hear a better version of Don't Bogart That Joint, even if he doesn't do it Saturday at Liberty Hall.
Volare, oh, cantare, oh.
We're talking Italiano here.
Oh, Dino.
Yeah, Dino. Oh. Dean Martin. God, who would have thought he still could be heard? There he is.
Well, hey, your show is responsible for this.
Yes.
You're playing him. Anyway, a more talented Italian-American was there ever than Dean Martin?
Maybe not.
And I have a sneaking feeling that his material will be referenced on stage more a lot than a little all weekend long at Festa Italiana, the annual celebration of Italian tradition.
But Zona Rosa, right?
Well, of course, Zona Rosa. You can't wait to get there. Friday night, Saturday and Sunday at the Zona Rosa shops and restaurants in Kansas City North. Lots of food, lots of
meatballs.
Meatball eating contest. Now, I don't know which is easier to eat fast, a cannoli or a meatball, but you're going to get a chance to find out. And here's what's interesting. There's one band that does covers. It's called Lights Out. Now, on Saturday, we'll make it Friday, they're going to do a show that's just full of awesome tribute music to Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And we get the Italian connection there. But Sunday, the same cover band, Lights Out, plays their Beach Boys hits, right?
That's so versatility.
I don't get it. But on the other hand, don't you remember a song called Mamma Mia, That's a Good Vibration?
Okay.
Don't you remember that one?
Let's go with that.
That's what we'll be singing.
Okay.
I ain't never been with a woman long enough for my boots to get old. But we've been together so long now they both need me so.
That's the Marshall Tucker Band. Are they going to be here?
Nah, of course they are. Why else? Hey,
that's
it's the
cool.
Marshall Tucker Band.
Like those
they
guys.
They will play at 7 o'clock Sunday night, right before Alabama comes on. Alabama at 9 o'clock on Sunday night. No, Saturday.
Yes.
This is the Tumbleweed Music Festival. It's country music. It's camping. A whole bunch of bands on stage. The load-in for the campers starts tonight at the 2,600-acre nature preserve in Lacine, Kansas. Oh, am I saying that right?
Yes.
I've never been there, but they tell me it's a 45-minute drive south on Highway 69.
That sounds pretty good.
From downtown KC.
That's a pretty good twin bill.
Canoe trips, zip line, camping, archery. Archery? Oh, okay. Archery?
Archery?
I don't know about that. A pool party, helicopter rides, fishing, a mechanical bull, wine tasting, hot air balloons. Archery?
It's all going to be there.
Can't believe it. Anyway, and the wonderful promise of an evening campfire sing-along. No doubt some campers will bring their guitars to pick.
Very good. Yes. Very good notion.
Absolutely.
If that rings a bell, that's a theme song to Little House on the Prairie.
Admit it, you watched more than one or two episodes of Little House on the Prairie.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find that to be the case, but I know how much people enjoyed that show.
How about if your mom had it on and you were like eating potato chips the kitchen and you heard that show? Anyway, that was a sweetheart show from long ago, and it ties into the prairie because we're having a family-friendly fun land on the grassland. It's Party on the Prairie, 8 to noon, 8 to noon. Don't miss it, Saturday at Jerry Smith Park, 139th and Home Street. Lots of stuff to do for the kids, horse-drawn hay rides. There's a prairie touch table. I couldn't begin to tell you what that'll be. And a quick paint contest.
Oh.
Do you paint quickly?
No.
When I paint,
I don't paint
it
at all.
Very quickly.
Yes.
And get it over with. That's
and finally today. What do we have here?
Be happy.
Yes.
Enjoy your summer.
Yes.
Go check out the sand volleyball pickup situation. It's volleyball pickup games, and it sounds like a mixer to meet new people from 7:30 to 10 Friday, 7:30 to 10 tomorrow night at Richard Berkeley Riverfront Park. Okay, which are you better at? Serving, spiking, passing, blocking, covering, digging, or pancaking?
I'm expert at all of it.
No. I just do the pancake.
No, all of it.
All of it?
Yes.
Well, if you need a pancaker, I will do that.
What's pancaking in that? You dive into the.
That's when you're prone and your palm is outstretched. You're at one with the ground and you're hoping, you're praying that the ball bounces off your outstretched hand.
There you go.
Anyway, the beautiful Missouri River. You're downtown, but do not forget to pay attention to the game.
Okay.
Otherwise, you'll be pancaking all day long.
That's Friday night at Berkeley Park.
All night long, right?
Okay. That's Brian McTavish in your weekend to-do list. Thank you, sir.
Todd, all the way.
Yes. Yesterday, Kansas City mayoral candidate Quentin Lucas told us his plans for the city. Hear what he had to say, as well as previous conversations. You'll find them at kcur.org/up-to-date. You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at kcurupto-date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow, a debate between Catherine Shields and Robert Westfall as they campaign for the Kansas City Council's 4th District at-large seat. Join us tomorrow for that conversation. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Emily Aiken. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.